Hi, this is Darcy Lowen, The Chainsaw, and you're listening to the Sixth Sense Podcast.
Hey, what's up, everybody? Welcome back to the Sixth Sense Podcast. Joining me in studios once again, the Graham Creech. Graham, welcome to the show. How are you?
Good. Coming off a big win. 1-0, start the season. How are you feeling?
Good, considering the way that Ottawa played yesterday. It was, I guess it's to be expected with the first game. They were disjointed. Penalties kind of ruined whatever flow that they could get in the early stages of the game. Looking at their blue line, in terms of moving the puck out of their D zone, getting it to the forwards quickly, and getting that transition game going, I thought that was painful to watch in the early going. It just looked disjointed, players standing around, waiting for things to happen, and it looked in the early goings like Ottawa was just standing around, and I had that vibe watching the game that, like, oh God, it's going to be one of those ugly games, kind of similar to what it was last year in Detroit, where they just got steamrolled. And looked awful in the process. But what are your thoughts on the game?
Same thing. First, it wasn't a good game to watch. Like as just a pure hockey fan, Sens obviously struggled in the opening two periods. I thought they played a solid third period, got a few goals, and dominated the play when Winnipeg had been playing better the entire game. Down trailing by one at home, heading into the third, I thought I was a little nervous with that one goal lead. That's for sure. But they played great. King K with a solid 3 points to maybe shut up the critics for another night. I'm happy. The new guys, what do you think? What do you want to start with? Guillaume, or do you want to start with the back end?
I think the only thing that started slower than the Senators was Guillaume Lachatresse's first few strides. he's not the most fleet of foot.
No, he threw a couple hits, though.
He had a couple scoring chances. Yeah. He had some chances early. There was the one that he just fired wide, rolled off a stick, and the goal math there. He lived up to the standards. Nice hands.
Yeah.
You know, he has the acumen. He has the hockey IQ. It's just he is not the fastest guy on the ice.
And he's missed a lot of time over the last couple seasons. Not only, like, is he starting on 1 week training camp, he hasn't played.
Exactly.
So, not too quick to be harsh on him, but I don't know. We'll see how that goes with that experiment, and maybe they look to Mike Hoffman to bring him up if that doesn't work out, or move up Colin Greening.
They have that flexibility, yeah. And I think that's the depth. We are the envy, as Eugene Melnyk would like to say. So that depth probably will come into play at some point, especially we were talking off-air about this. If Lachatresse can't seem to find that scoring touch within the first few weeks, months, 2 months, I wouldn't be surprised to see the Senators cut bait, and try another option. Maybe someone with a little more speed, but yeah.
We'll see how it goes. And
it's the first game. It's tough to be overly critical, but he looked fine.
He'll see some more power play time too. Like, but they have one power play last night. So we'll see. He'll get some more second unit power play time. Maybe he had a couple scoring chances last night. He almost put one in. So.
Speaking of new guys, the back end, I noticed online a lot of people were sending out accolades for the Andre Benoit, Patrick Wierkoch pairing. What do you think of them yesterday?
I wasn't disappointed in them. Like, they didn't cost. Obviously, nothing led to any goals other than that power play goal. Wierkoch took a penalty. They didn't cost them, but I don't buy into the fact that they were outstanding. I thought they got into a lot of trouble last night. It seemed, especially the first two periods, every time that they were on the ice, I felt the Senators were trapped in their zone for 45 seconds, minute and a half, which would lead to a penalty, scoring chance. So I wasn't overly impressed, but I'm not disappointed. I'm not gonna just bag on them right now. They'll bounce back. It's their first game together.
Do you think much of the praise probably stems from the fact that a lot of people probably didn't have high expectations for this pairing going into the game? Two guys who've been in the AHL for years now, and they held their head above water. And they treaded water. They looked serviceable.
Yeah, I guess they came out alive, the most polite way to put it. I thought they did okay. I just don't understand why they're seeing so much praise, because I thought that they were struggling. They got out of the game. They won. They'll take the 2 points. They'll move on to Florida. I'll add another cliche in there if, I can find one. But no, seriously, I think they did okay.
A win is a win is a win.
Win is a win. They'll work on that. I just felt they struggled, and then as you pointed out earlier off air, Kyle Turris struggled in the faceoff circle, which they were on the ice with that pairing often. So if you're losing every faceoff in your own end, that doesn't help.
Yeah, exactly. Kyle Turris was 33% in the faceoff dot, and that's one facet of his game that kind of struggled last season. He had a goal late. What do you think of the second line's production? Did you like Letendres with Turris and Alfie?
Give him a couple more looks. Too early to judge.
Too small a sample.
But so far, they had a couple scoring chances. Letendres had a couple pucks bounce off his stick or skate right in the crease. Alfie looked okay. I like his little slash back after the cross check.
Right to the hip back area.
Left the flow coming in on Alfie, too. What's he doing?
It's coming back to the glory days.
I know. You see him off ice, and it looks like it's coming in nice. But with the helmet on, he looks like... I'm expecting like a fake stick toss next time he visits the ACC. Love it.
Oh, man. Another young player who we haven't hit on. His first game. Well, not his first game in the NHL, but his first regular season NHL game. Jakob Silfverberg, what do you think? Do we call him Jacob, Jakob, Jacob?
I've heard three different things. We've received Binghamton Centers at the start of the year. Actually, this is pretty neat. What they did is they had every single player say their name, and they recorded it. And he put in that Jacob, and now I believe it's Jacob, according to AJ yesterday on the pregame show. And obviously, we've also heard Jakob, so I don't know.
Well, if he keeps playing well, he can refer to himself however he likes.
Yeah. It doesn't bother me. I'll just call him Silfer or something.
He looked comfortable, especially as the game wore on. He looked more and more comfortable. I'm expecting big things this year.
Me too. I took my hockey pool. Not that that means anything, but
yeah.
I'm expecting him to get that shot with those guys and to remain there. He's a smart player. You keep hearing how heavy a shot is. So I'm looking forward to seeing that. And if he's that smart and he's got such a great NHL shot, there's no one else to really put on that line and give them that opportunity anyways, unless you move Alfie around or something, which you're not going to do.
Like, when the bar has been set so low with Bobby Butler, you can only go up.
He's
going to
put up points. From there.
Exactly. I don't know what's reasonable. He's a little advanced in age. He's not your typical rookie, right?
Yeah.
He's not 18, 19, 20 coming into the league. Like, this is a guy who's 22, I believe. 22. So he has that experience. He has that maturity. He has the pedigree coming over from the Swedish Elite League. He has the MVP honors from last season. So this is a guy who's matured. And, yeah, it wouldn't be a shock to see him, you know, get somewhere on the pace for, like, 20 to 25 goals. Maybe that's being a tad optimistic.
In a shortened season?
Yeah. Not 20 to 25 goals, but like on pace for 25, like over the course of a full season. So you're talking like, you know, 10, 12 goals, maybe 13.
I'd expect that of him. He's going to see first power play unit time, and he's playing with Spezza and McCulloch. McCulloch looked good.
Yeah. He always starts hot, though.
Yeah. Yeah, so I'm expecting him to stay on that line and put up some points. If we're going to stick with the new guy tradition, we're going to talk about the goaltending.
Sure.
Obviously not Craig Anderson, but what's going on with that three-headed monster?
The three-headed monster. See, I was under the impression that Ottawa kind of brought Lehner along on this trip because they were having a team function, and obviously Robin Lehner's a big part of this future, and I kind of saw it as the organization rewarding him for the season that he's had to this point in Bingo, and just to kind of like reassure him that he would be the guy or at least be part of this team moving forward. I'm a little surprised to see him back out Craig Anderson for the first game because, you know, I just figured, you know, after the dinner he'd go back to Bingo and then play his games there as well. So I was a bit surprised by that, but he's the future. I don't think there's any question that everyone's expecting him to be the guy, whether it's a fan, management, the coaching staff, the players. I think he's the guy moving forward. And now you're just kind of opening yourself up to the questions of, all right, obviously a deal is going to have to be made at some point. Who's going to be the guy to go? And I think that's a crazy, crazy, crazy conversation that you can have because it can go a number of different ways.
It can. Only thing I'd say is you're not trading Robin.
Right. That much is guaranteed.
That much.
Unless you're overwhelmed with some ridiculous offer.
You'd have to be pretty impressive. But I don't know why he's still here. Haven't heard anything yet of when they plan on sending him down or if he's going to play against Florida on Monday, which I doubt. But the way after Craig Anderson was impressive yesterday, I like how he played.
Yeah, he got more and more comfortable as the game went on as well. Yeah. I thought early on, you know, a couple pucks hit the post and you're like, oh my God, oh my God.
Well, the second one was through traffic and got tipped and,
exactly.
and went up. But and you're running around against Winnipeg at home in that building.
And they were hemmed in their own zone for a lot of the first period and a half.
He made a nice glove save off Scheifele. Zero chance on that goal. Bomb from Byfuglien. That was unreal. He played well. I expect him to be back in the net. With Leonard, they can't keep three goalies around unless they have a trade coming. At this point, I don't think they get anything for Ben Bishop. They certainly don't get anything more than the second rounder they gave up.
Right.
And do you want Robin Leonard playing backup minutes right now? Probably not.
So what do you do? Because obviously, if you're Ben Bishop and you're in this situation where you know Robin Lehner's probably going to be the guy, possibly as early as next season, you're an unrestricted free agent come July. I think they pushed it back from the first. Maybe it's like the fourth, fifth,
year. Something like that, yeah.
So what do you do if you're Ben Bishop? Is this a place where you'd want to sign an extension?
I think either way, no matter where he goes, he's going to be in a similar situation. Maybe not where that there's going to be a guy that's looked at to lead them in the future, but he's not going to be handed a number one opportunity right off the bat anyways. He'll have to fight for it at least, and there'll be someone else that'll either platoon or he'll be the number two going into it. So if they move Anderson, let's say, maybe sign an extension in Ottawa because there's a chance you play. There's a chance that Robin Leonard might not turn out. Who knows? Or maybe they'll do a platoon. Well, he'll see 30, 40 games. Because wherever he goes, if he signs his UFA somewhere, he doesn't have enough of a track record for anyone to throw money at and to commit to him being their starter. I don't think, anyway. So what would you trade for this guy? Not much, based on how little he's played.
And that's part of it, right? You're seeing a lot of conversations in articles around the league where people are saying, well, Ben Bishop, maybe that's the guy that Ottawa will use to get another top four defenseman. But realistically, what NHL general manager right now is going to give a top four defenseman up for a guy who has, what, 20 games of NHL experience? I don't know. Like, that, to me, you're just trading for a guy who's an impending UFA who has all the leverage in the world if you make that trade. I just can't see them getting a lot for Ben Bishop right now.
No.
Unless they package him with a few other prospects. But, I mean, if you're Ottawa, why would you really want to do that right now? You're almost waiting for the organization, or for another team, rather. You're almost waiting for another team to, like, get that goaltending injury, get that, like, little bit of controversy, and then sell. But if you move a guy like Craig Anderson, it would, you know, Brian Murray would have to have some pretty big stones to move Craig Anderson at this point in time.
To go with those two rookies.
During the season, anyways, because then you're throwing all the eggs in the Robin Lehner's basket. And with this defense playing behind it, you know, we saw them get hemmed in a lot yesterday, albeit it's just one game. But I don't know if that's the situation that you want to expose Lehner to, especially when he's like brimming with confidence playing at the AHL level this year. So there's so many like little intricacies to the situation. It's going to be fascinating to watch it unfold.
Yeah, for sure. And the only way you can get anything for Bishop right now, I think, is if he's playing games. And he's not going to do that unless the Senators start to tank, which isn't a good situation for anyone. Leonard's got to go back down to Bingo. Unless they have a deal for Craig Anderson up their sleeve. I have honestly no clue what they're doing. I think what you're probably bang on with them just saying, here, massage your ego, Robin. You're our goalie of the future, part of the team. We'll let you sit up here for a week and then send you back down.
Then you're under the gun. Obviously, you'd have to make a deal in the offseason to move one of these goaltenders to, well, Ben Bishop would obviously just walk. Do you think
he'd re-sign here?
If I'm trying to put myself in Bishop's shoes. If I was coming into a situation in which I knew Craig Anderson was getting dealt to make room for Robin Lehner, then I think that would be a situation that would be kind of attractive because Lehner obviously doesn't have that body of NHL work. So if he struggles or, you know, the team falters or stumbles slightly, you're the guy.
Yeah.
And you finally get that shot. But I think that's contingent upon Craig Anderson being moved. So in every situation, like if I'm Brian Murray, I'm probably trying to hammer out an extension with Bishop. at least for like a year. Give him like $2 million, $1.5 million, $2 million, just to say, hey, give us that, like, you know, give us that flexibility. And that would allow them to trade a guy like Craig Anderson, whether it's this during the season or during the summer. I think that's probably the avenue that I would take.
Lots of options. Maybe they send Robin down. Bishop's the backup, gets in a few games, and maybe they move him at the deadline. Who knows? I guess we'll see. I tweeted out earlier that I thought that maybe Craig Anderson was uncomfortable with his equipment because he's changed a few times. Changed from Sherwood to Brian's over the summer. And then he recently used Vaughn in training camp, which is I felt was strange for a goalie to switch gear in a week-long
training camp. Such a condensed camp, yeah.
Like, goalies don't like to change anyways. That's why they do it in the summer, get used to their pads, work them in. So I thought that was strange, and it is reading too much into it, but I thought that was a potential. Maybe he wasn't comfortable. Bring Robin along in case we have to start him. I don't know, but clearly that's not the case. But he looked good last night. Nothing to complain about when you have three goalies, I guess. It's a good situation to be than not have a goaltender, not knowing who your goalie is opening night.
Being able to trade some of that depth, bring in some more talent. I think that's the goal for every organization. And at some point this season, it's going to happen. Whether it's some of the prospect depth at the AHL level or it's some of Ottawa's goaltending depth, I think eventually you're going to see that quantity parlay for quality. And you know, I think eventually everyone kind of knows it's going to happen on the back end. It's just, it'll be fun to see what they actually get and bring back in return. Oh, line combos from yesterday afternoon. Is there any particular line that stood out?
I'd have to say no, just because of the way they played the first two periods. Obviously, I'm a huge Zach Smith man. I thought he was awesome last night. He had that one shift in particular where he split the D, went in, should have had a hooking penalty called against him, got the stick up in the gloves.
Especially when Ottawa was getting killed by the referees.
5-1 at that point. No call?
Yeah.
Like, it was chintzy. If that had happened somewhere in the neutral zone or something, that's kind of a call. You're like, come on. But they said they're going to crack down more on that. And he had a legit scoring opportunity, and they were getting killed on the penalties. I don't know why that. But even that shift, right after that, he lost the puck, he got the puck, he brought it back into the zone. He had an awesome shift. Really love Zach Smith, what he brings.
And they created a goal off the cycle. Chris Neal obviously got his first of the season.
I wasn't sure for a minute if he was going to see that puck or not. Just sitting there.
Mark Stewart had no idea where it was either.
Oh, man. Chris Neal gets it done. What about Jimmy O'Brien?
Yeah, no, he was playing well. Every time I saw that line on the ice, I noticed it was a few times in the second period where, like, Ottawa had nothing going to this point, and then you see that line get possession of the puck, and, like, they'd have it for a prolonged period. It never really culminated in, a crazy scoring opportunity or anything, but at least they were, like, starting to get that energy, something to feed off of down in the Winnipeg zone.
I don't know if it was the Carlson... Like, I don't know if it was a Carlson goal or their first power play, but they had that shift where they were getting killed. They had good cycle shift, and then the Spezza line got out there, and they drew the penalty. So that helped. I thought they were good. They keep it simple, right? Like, get it off the boards, get it out, chip it in, finish your checks. Nice cycle. There's a little bit of scoring touch on for those guys being fourth line or third line, whatever you want to call them. Each guy kind of has a scoring touch, and it's nice to have Regan down there.
Would you think of, well, while we're on the subject of line combos, would you think of the defensive pairing of Mathot and Carlson? Were you comfortable with it?
Not at first. I thought it looked a little awkward at first.
Well, Carlson looked awful in the first 10 minutes of the game.
Yeah, puck was bouncing around, wasn't controlling it well. There's a couple of bad passes, but I think it's going to be solid.
I was actually surprised at how well Mathot moves.
Yeah. Going into this game, I don't remember watching Mathot play, so I didn't know what to expect, like, just from what I had read. So I was happy with it. Just what he brings. Philip Kuba isn't an all-star, but he was a calming presence back there, and I think Mathot will be a little bit the same way for Carlson. Give him the puck, let him move the puck, start the breakout. The thing that I love about it is if Carlson gets pushed around or Brian boiled in the face near the crease, you're going to have Mark Mathot, who's not going to put up with that, with his gap-tooth smile just...
He knows his role.
I love it.
He knows his job.
So hopefully that pans out. They need that to pan out.
Yeah, they do. Gonchar and Phillips.
They looked tired and slow. And
The scariest part of the game for me was when Evander Kane is essentially coming in on a 1-on-2, and he just undressed Phillips. And the only thing that Phillips didn't do was give him a Big Rig beer. It was such a gift. It was awful. Awful to watch. It was lax. It was like NHL All-Star Game caliber defense.
It was beer league hockey. He went for the poke check, made him look silly, and then wired one, I think, off the crossbar. Evander Kane's a special player. I like that guy.
And it was nothing play. It was just...
Well, he was coming in 1-on-2, I think.
Oh, it was. It was awful.
Maybe even 1-on-3. But yeah, I think he was okay though. Like he played well positionally, and CBC pointed out a couple things that he was done. He was taking time and space away from guys. So he's still a good defenseman. I like him on like a third pairing. He'd be solid.
Shelter
guy.
His minutes a little bit more. Yeah.
Yeah, but he did look slow. He looked like he did spend some time in the brew pub over the lockout. But I don't know. He played upwards of 20 minutes. Gonchar saw 23 minutes. He was playing in the KHL, obviously.
Yeah.
Nice little pass to Carlson.
Paul McLean balanced the lines very well. I think everybody was pretty much 10 minutes or more. I think Regan was 9:40, but he served a minor penalty. So I think, yeah, most of the lines played 10 minutes or more. So it was a balanced effort, and hopefully that carries over to Monday night against Florida. Everybody's fresh, ready to go, get the hiccups out of their game. Florida looked actually pretty good against Carolina.
AK-27.
Yeah.
Who would have thought?
You know what? It was a night for the old guys yesterday.
Yager, four points.
Ray Whitney, Solani. It was like the mid-90s came back and just cool. It's a very, very cool night yesterday.
Yeah, no, it was. I wish I had watched more puck last night, but we'll have that to come. We've got a free preview of Center Ice. Some games on today. I don't know what Florida. We got AK-27, Philip Kuba, the reigning Norris Trophy winners, former defense partners, coming back to town.
Alexei Kovalev coming in on free beer night after he blasted the Ottawa media for taking some beers on the road with him in the airports.
Oh, that's gold. You think he's going to get booed on Monday night, and then Montreal's just going to love him on Tuesday night?
Yeah, it'll be fun to watch the reactions to guys like Kovalev and Kuba. Because Kuba was booed on opening night last year as well.
Yeah, and Gonch.
So it's going to be a quick, it'll be a nice little turnaround just to see how the fans treat those guys.
I don't think the fans will shower Kuba with booze tomorrow night. I don't think they should. I think if they do, that's kind of donkey move. But he didn't leave on any bad terms. He got a big paycheck from Florida. Ottawa wasn't going to match. So I don't blame him for leaving. I don't expect anything. I expect him to boo Kovalev. I don't know. Not that he deserves it. I know that's what the auto crowd's going to do.
That's low-hanging fruit. It's Alexei Kovalev. You know what's going to happen.
Who was he playing with last night?
Oh, I don't even know.
I think he got a couple of his points were power play points, I believe.
I don't know if he's playing with Huberto. Because I think Huberto had a goal and two assists as well.
Yeah, he did. You know who else got a couple goals last night?
Brian Campbell?
And Danny Heatley.
Yes.
Oh, we won't get to boo him this year.
But it looks like the offensive scoring title for defensemen is going to be between Brian Campbell and Erik Karlsson again. Karlsson.
What's the key ingredient there?
Philip Kuba.
Yeah. Unreal.
Steadying presence.
Not bad.
Should be fun to watch. Hopefully it doesn't degenerate into too much pond hockey tomorrow.
Florida and Ottawa had some wild games last year. Remember one of them was crazy. I think Nick Foligno tied the game up with like 7 seconds left or something, or won the game late.
Mm-hmm.
I think Florida, Versteeg tied the game up with 30 seconds left or something.
And then Ottawa won it in OT. Yeah.
No, in regulation. I think Foligno scored with like 7 seconds left or something.
Oh, you're right. He tied it up. Yep. Yeah, with the pull goalie. Yeah. And then, that's right. Those are some wild times.
Wild games. Do you want to take a break maybe, come back, talk about the rest of the league, or is anything else you want to hit on from yesterday?
No, not really. Craig Anderson obviously played well. We haven't really talked about him too much. We talked about the goaltending trio.
Let's talk about Craig Anderson then.
Sure, we can talk a little Anderson and then little jet Anderson. Out. Or you know what? Let's talk Craig Anderson after the break and then we'll come back.
All right.
Hey, what's up, everybody? Welcome back to the podcast. One thing that we neglected to hit on before going to break is the play of one Mika Zibanejad. He has goals in back-to-back games. Last night, I believe he had, what, 8 shots on net? Just looking at you. You're looking down, looking up, down, up.
I saw the 8 on this, but it's his penalty minutes on the season. So I couldn't confirm. Yeah, he had 8 shots.
So it's nice to see him finally start to get going. If you look at his numbers across the board, he now has, what, 10 points in 20 games? So he's averaging half a point a game. Obviously, that's a huge marked improvement from where he was early in the season. He obviously wasn't invited to training camp because of the lingering health complications that he's had throughout the course of the season. I guess this can only be viewed as positively.
Yeah, for sure. Now down there in Bingo, they're going to be counting upon him, Hoffman and DaCosta to get majority, and Stone to get majority of the scoring done with the call-ups in Binghamton. So you'd like to see him make the most of his opportunity and develop into what we hope to be a top six forward.
Do you think he's going to be the first person to get that shot, or do you think he has to pass a few guys on the depth chart? And Hoffman's a guy that you mentioned, Stone as well.
I think it would be Hoffman right now. Like if there's an injury shortly, or if somebody doesn't work out in a top six role, even like third line, you could put Mike Hoffman anywhere. I think Zibanejad would have to really come on huge in the next few weeks, put up some monster numbers, and say, okay, maybe we should give this guy a shot if something happens.
And because it's a shortened season, I believe he has to play in more than 5 games. I think
5. Yeah, 6 is the
so
game,
they just
yeah.
halved it, right? So. Yeah. Okay, so if he plays in more than 5 games the first year of his contract, his ELC is burned. I wonder if that's a deterrent. Maybe that's why you'll see maybe a few other prospects get that call. I mean, if we're talking business here, we sat here in the first half of the podcast and we talked about Ben Bishop and the situation that his contract creates. I wonder how big of a role Zibanejad's contract will play this year.
I think it would be part of it, but I also think he's just, with him not playing any games in the last few months leading up to the World Juniors and everything, he just hasn't played. They want him playing right now. So I think Mike Hoffman impressed a lot of people at camp. I just think he's the next guy. You could put him anywhere. He could kill penalties. He could play the point on the power play. He could play. He's very fast out there.
Very versatile. He'd actually be a guy who I could see fitting in on a third line if Regan...
Like down the road, or just if he gets a shot?
Oh, sorry. I just meant this year, period.
Okay.
Or if Latondres, obviously we talked about that in the first half. If he goes down, maybe Hoffman's that fast kind of
you put him
scorer
anywhere.
That you can put up there on the left wing. But I was thinking more in terms of, if Regan slides over to center on the third line and Jimmy O'Brien goes down to the fourth, maybe Hoffman's a guy that you could slide in on that side. I know last time we came in for the podcast, you wanted to get into predictions. Obviously, the season started yesterday. So how about we get into just – I don't want to get into every team because that'll take way too long. How about just some overviews of each division, and we'll conclude with the Northeast division. So how about we start with the Central and the Western Conference? Which teams do you like there?
I like Chicago and St. Louis.
Just like St. Louis because of the Wade Redden connection?
Hey, you know what? There might be a couple of analysts out there that think he has a better shot at winning the Norris than Erik Karlsson. Wade Redden playing with Pietrangelo. So let's see.
It seems like a weird landing zone. I know, looking back, I think Wade Redden allegedly had such a great rapport with Ken Hitchcock. I forget which local beat writer it was who said that Hitchcock really wanted Redden to come to Columbus back when he was coaching there, and Wade's contract had obviously expired with the Senators. It still, to me, it seems like a bit of a weird fit because Wade, for the last number of years has been in a situation where he just cannot live up to the expectations. And I know going to St. Louis, it's obviously a very good team, but that team will have those expectations to do well. I figured he'd just go play in obscurity in some lesser market, so to speak, or a lesser team just to get those minutes and, prove that he can play at the NHL level and then play for his next contract.
I like the move. I think he'll probably walk in. I haven't really read anything from St. Louis on what they expect from him. But I'd expect him to walk in probably like 6th, 7th defenseman. Just some depth. That's going to be a good team this year. They're expected to probably advance to the Cup Finals or at least the Western Conference Finals.
And it's a young team, too.
Yeah, just bring his leadership back there. I don't mind the fit. I don't know who they're planning on playing with him with. I wouldn't expect him to get top 4 minutes.
No,
he's not.
He didn't
player
play yesterday either.
But I don't know. I like it. I know some people don't care. They don't feel bad for him. I never really felt bad for him because he was still getting his money. But his problem was he just made too much money. He was given a monster contract based on, I'm not sure if who was watching hockey the last 2 years when they signed that deal.
I think you have to have some level of empathy for a guy who's should be in the league probably.
Yeah, well,
I haven't seen him play in the last few years, but on some level, I think you have to have that empathy because probably the only reason why the guy's not in the show right now is just because he's making $6.5 million.
He could have for sure been a bottom pairing defenseman making like $2 million a year when he coming out of that deal with Ottawa. I don't see why not. So I'm happy to see him get his 1,000th game and get back in the NHL because as much as I shouldn't feel bad for him because he's making a ton of money. The guy wants to be playing hockey at the highest level possible, and he wasn't able to do that for the last couple of years. And not only that, when the lockout happened this year, he couldn't even go play in the AHL where he had been spending the last couple of years because of his NHL contract. So I'm happy that he's going to play his 1,000th game and maybe go on a deep playoff run. We'll see how – we haven't seen him play for a couple of years, so who knows.
Could be a changing of the guard as well because Detroit got absolutely shellacked. I don't know if you watched the highlights of that, but it was just odd man rush after odd man rush after odd man rush. Vlad Tarasenko looked unbelievable yesterday. And the post-Lidstrom defense does not look good.
Oh, they've lost a lot, and they're getting old, which Pavel Datsyuk's, what, 34, 35, I think, right now?
Zetterberg's getting up there as well.
Coming into the season, I had Detroit coming somewhere around bottom playoff seed, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, somewhere around there. Depends on what they get from their goaltending. And if their number one line dominates, their defense is obviously thin. But St. Louis, I've always liked coming into this year. I just think they're really deep. So far, they didn't have that one offensive stud on like forward that could just go out there and put up the big points. But maybe Tarasenko is going to be that. He's an older player.
Jaden Schwartz is there as well.
Jaden Schwartz is... I don't know where they're going to be playing him. I don't know if
Chris Stewart hopefully will rebound for them. That's another guy who has great, exceptional talent.
Big
power forward, but the knock on him for the last few years has been his work habits. So they have a lot of great talent, great young defense. I love Shattenkirk. I love Petrangelo. But again, it's going to come down to the goaltending, the depth, the talent on the third and fourth lines.
I like Chicago to have a bounce back year.
Health permitting.
Marin Hossa had a big night.
Goaltending is always the question in Chicago.
That's for sure. Patrick Kane feels like he has something to prove. That guy's a world-class player. And I just, after they won the Cup, they've had a couple of mediocre seasons and not advancing very far in the playoffs. I feel like they have something to prove this year.
And Columbus is probably going to be awful, even though they won in a shootout yesterday against Nashville. Do you expect anything out of Nashville this year, or is it just ho-hum, David Poile, same ragtag bunch that might squeak into the playoffs and probably cause no waves?
I don't expect them. I expect them to take a big hit. I know the popular thing is never count Nashville out with Barry Trotz and what they do with very little parts. It's Mike Fisher, their number one center. They don't have a true number one center. They lost a big piece in Ryan Suter. They have a number one goaltender and Shea Weber, obviously. They'll probably be in the thick of things, but I expect them to take a step back.
Switching up divisions, how about the Northwest? You talked about Danny Heatley earlier.
Heater.
Looks like he has a pulse.
Didn't see the highlights from their game. I'm picking Minnesota to win that division.
What?
You want to know why? Because Vancouver doesn't have a second line. And I had this before last night. I don't care. You'll see in my Northeast, or not my Northeast, my
that might
Southeast.
Be the worst division in hockey.
The Pacific or the Northwest?
Yeah.
You'll see. Okay, when we come to the Southeast, you'll see why my projections aren't based on last night's games. But Vancouver just doesn't have the second line right now with the injuries.
Well, when's Kessler expected back?
Isn't he? I've heard so many different things. I've heard a couple months.
But we're already into January, right? So obviously he's a huge piece of that puzzle.
Big time.
The one thing that was weird about Vancouver is that not many of their players played overseas during the lockout. I think it was just Yannick Hansen or someone else there whose name escapes me right now. But the Sedins didn't play. Obviously, Schneider played overseas.
Yeah.
Obviously, Bobby Lee was sitting at home tweeting.
Allegedly.
Yeah. Colorado's kind of an intriguing team. Ryan O'Reilly. I don't know why that guy's not under contract. That guy is an unbelievably good hockey player. I loved watching that guy come into Ottawa early in the season last year. That line was just on fire. I think it was like him, Vinnick.
I don't remember that.
They just ran roughshod all over Ottawa in the offensive zone. It was just, they're flying. They just dominated the possession game.
That was like, wasn't that, I think they scored 7 goals on a second.
Yeah, it was ugly. Right? Yeah. Absolutely ugly. But they have some talent up front. Landeskog, Duchesne, obviously. Duchesne was in the doghouse last year. Not much depth on defense beyond Eric Johnson. Varlamov is a quality young goaltender. But they need some help.
So you were surprised when I said Minnesota's going to win that division. Like, look at, we just went over everyone needing help. Calgary's Calgary. Edmonton.
Calgary's awful, yeah.
Edmonton's got those dynamic young forwards.
Calgary's like the guy at the bar who just keeps hitting on the girl and he just doesn't get the hint on when to stop and just let it go and move on. And Calgary's like that. They just refuse to retool, rebuild. It's just old hat. Let's bring in some other guys who are great in the early 2000s. Yeah.
Moving on to the Pacific.
What about Edmonton? Justin Schultz is one player who I'm looking forward to watching, especially this afternoon. They played the first game. Ottawa finished as the bridesmaid in the Justin Schultz sweepstakes, so I'm looking forward to seeing how he can play at the NHL level.
Well, he's putting up monster numbers in the AHL, obviously, wherever he's played.
He was up there and almost, I think he was like almost the league's leading scorer.
He's going to see number one power play unit time with some dynamic forwards. Again, there, it's going to be about goaltending and defensive depth with that team. Sports Illustrated has him, what, third overall? I don't know.
You buy into the hype that quickly. Yeah, it'll be interesting to see how well their skilled players up front, who are obviously still very, very young. A number of them haven't even played full seasons. You're looking at guys like Taylor Hall, Ryan Nugent Hopkins. Can those guys play the two-way game necessary to win and compete at the highest level in the NHL? That's my concern. And then you're bringing in Yakupov, Eberle, obviously. They just have a bunch of really nice, intriguing young offensive pieces, but do they play the complete game? You know, because most of these guys are playing on their top two lines, and you kind of need that balance to be able to compete. You'll have your shootout games, but I don't know. Are they there yet? Is Devin Dubnyk the guy who's going to be the guy in Edmonton?
Not that I watch Edmonton very closely. I don't see Devin Dubnyk being that guy. He played during the lockout, so maybe he's improved. I don't know. I just see that being an issue for them. Maybe that's a team that inquires about
Ben Bishop. Or Craig Anderson, for that matter.
Yeah.
But what do they have that Ottawa could actually get or want, for that matter? Aside from, like, obviously the young talent up front, you're not going to get a great defenseman from Edmonton.
They're not going to give up any because
no, exactly.
They need it.
Unless they trade, like, Ladislav Smead or something to Ottawa for
the old Danny Heatley
Bishop
trade.
Well, you're trading one UFA for one UFA. I wouldn't be opposed to that, assuming you could get Schmid signed to a contract. Obviously, there's some history there with Brian Murray. I just can't see Edmonton doing that personally, but that's one route that they could go. All right, Pacific. You have Anaheim. Obviously, Timo Solani's swan song is going to be the recurring theme for that group throughout the course of the season. Obviously, you have the lingering uncertainty with Corey Perry and Ryan Getzlaff. Both are impending UFAs.
Plus the trade rumors from Bobby Ryan from last year.
Yeah, it's a weird team. It's a really weird team. They have some great young talent, though, coming through the system. Obviously, you have the Vertigo goaltender, Jonas Hiller.
He was on top of his game before that happened. So.
Yeah, they had a good second half, like you said, last week on the pod. Playoff team, not a playoff team.
Tough to tell in that division, too, because you want to always count Phoenix out. But
what do you do if you're Bob Murray? Because you have these, you know, realistically, you have three unbelievably wanted, desirable UFAs to be in Solani, Getzlaff, and Perry. You could restock that system incredibly fast and like
just expedite
that rebuilding process a little bit more. But you got your franchise would be gutted.
For sure. You'd bottom out this
year. But I mean, do you risk losing them? Kind of similar to what happened in Nashville with Ryan Suter?
I guess you see where tough contracts decisions go, and then you make your decision. You can't lose those guys for nothing.
Mm-hmm.
So see how the season plays out. See how the contract talks are going during the season.
And you're noticing Toronto is pairing all their salary as well, right? You can kind of see where that angle is going as well.
Go start a new team on the East Coast under Randy Carlyle.
Yeah, there are those fits as well.
Maybe their future captain of the Ottawa Senators, Corey Perry.
Dallas, they have some old pieces as well.
They have some old pieces. They brought in Derek Roy, got rid of Mike Ribeiro. Obviously, Ben's not signed.
Steve Ott's gone.
I think this division's kind of wide open.
Phoenix, old hat.
Los Angeles looked like garbage on banner night. But
that's usually the case, apparently.
I think Los Angeles has got to win that division.
Yeah, if Jonathan Quick has a season that he had last year.
You expect Drew Doughty to rebound and have an unreal regular season after missing so much time with the contract holdout net last year.
I think the Kopitar injury hurts him a little bit.
Yeah.
Obviously.
But they're still pretty deep. They still have Mike Richards, Jeff Carter, Dustin Brown, Dustin Penner, Williams, Gagne. Like they have some parts there that can get the job done still. They have good defensive. They have one of the best goaltenders in the league.
San Jose, another one of those aging teams that's just, you keep waiting for that team to do something, and it just, they fall flat every year.
Looks like their window's closing.
They're in the same boat as Vancouver almost.
Yeah. I hope Mach 9 bounces back. I'd like to see him have a big year after all the injury problems throughout his career. I love Mach 9. Martin Havlat. Logan Couture.
Marlo Thornton. Boyle. Old hat. Scott Gomez apparently is skating with the team. That looks like it's kind of in the formality stage that he's going to sign there eventually.
That is a really old team. It's tough to say with that division. I could see any team coming away with this division.
Mm-hmm. Really? The West is really wide open, with the exception of St. Louis or Chicago. I think most of the teams are just... I wouldn't put money on any of those teams making the playoffs. I wouldn't be comfortable because every team has a massive flaw. All right.
Moving east?
Eastern Conference. Let's start in the Southeast. We'll work backwards.
What do you like? I've started the last couple, so what do you like doing this?
You know what? I don't think Florida is as bad as people make them out to be. I know last year they kind of exceeded expectations, but they have some intriguing young talent coming through the system. We talked about Huberto earlier. Intriguing young talent, not being Alexei Kovalev, but they have some guys who can play that well. I've always liked Kevin Dineen, having watched a couple of Florida games last season in Ottawa. Those guys play hard for a full 60 minutes, and you need that, especially when you're playing against all those crappy teams in the Southeast constantly. Tampa Bay, I'm interested in seeing how Lindback does now that he's the guy.
Yeah, absolutely.
It's all about St. Louis and Stamkos, though. Like, Martin St. Louis hasn't regressed as a player, and he's getting up there in age. But he's phenomenal. Phenomenal to watch play.
Yeah, he's great. Him and Sidney Crosby, two best backhands, and I guess Pavel Datsyuk, three best backhands in the league. Unreal to watch that guy fly down and sneak something upstairs under the bar. He's outstanding, and you're right. When is he going to start slowing down?
Hasn't happened yet. Mind you, he's been blessed by playing with some unbelievably talented players over the past, you know, eight to 10 years.
Yeah.
So,
but he's so quick. His hands are so good. He's durable. He's a warrior.
Yep.
I like Carolina.
Yeah, they made some moves. Losing Tuomo Ruutu for the season kind of sucks.
Yeah, that obviously hurts him.
Salmon, is he motivated? I think that's the biggest issue.
Either way, he's got a great shot, and he's going to be playing with a stall.
Yeah.
And then you got Skinner with another stall.
And then, I've never been a huge fan of Jordan Stahl, which is weird because everywhere else you look in the media, it's just they rave about him.
I guess we're about to find out.
How good is he? Is he a great third line center, or is he a great second line center?
I guess we'll see. My thing with Carolina is now they have a little bit more depth beyond Eric Stahl,
mm-hmm,
and Cam Ward. I love Cam Ward. Always been a huge fan of Cam Ward. Their defense is a little weak, but...
Cut and pace. Winnipeg, absolutely unimpressed with Winnipeg. With the exception of, obviously, they have Enstrom and Bufflin on the back end. Evander Kane's a great player up front. Other than that, though, I can't even get excited about Mark Scheifele.
Well, he's playing on the fourth line. Are they just giving him another five-game sniff here, or is he with the big club for the year?
If I'm a GM of a team, I wouldn't waste a guy's rookie eligibility on... If I know my team is going to be a bad team, I don't expect Winnipeg to make the playoffs. I wouldn't waste a shortened season and burn a guy's eligibility for a year just to give him fourth line minutes. To me, that doesn't make sense. Maybe it's a little bit different in a situation like Galchenyuk's in Montreal, where he's actually playing on the second line with Gionta and Plekanec. But yeah, for a guy to be playing fourth line minutes and playing like, you know, 6 to 10 minutes a night, that's just, it's a bit ridiculous. I don't know what your expectations are for a guy who's playing those minutes with that caliber of talent. They don't have much to be excited about, though.
No. We talked on the way up here to the studios about just getting nothing in return for those Hossa Kovalchuk deals. Like, that set the franchise back big time.
And it kind of plays in part with what's going to happen with Perry and Getzlaf. Like, you know, if you don't get anything of significant value for those guys and they walk as free agents at the end of the year, you know, you just shot yourself in the foot. You probably just tacked on like another year or two of rebuilding time to your franchise. Okay. How about Washington? Adam Oates, that's the X factor, right? Getting away from Dale Hunter's style of play, the defensive shell system. What do you think of Adam Oates?
I'd have to see some games. I need a sample size to see what kind of system he's going to run.
Mm-hmm. I think it was when we had Foster on the podcast. He raved about Adam Oates. I think he was doing the power play stuff in Tampa at the time, during that era. And he was getting some praise from him, at least at that time anyway. So he's well-regarded around the league. Offensive mind, cerebral. He's the playmaker.
Added Mike Ribeiro.
Yeah, that's what he does.
Yeah.
Obviously, the loss of Backstrom to concussion issues is huge.
I still like Carolina and Tampa ahead of Washington in this division. Again, it's another division where who knows what's going
to happen. Lots of flawed teams. How about the Atlantic?
Tough division. I like the Rangers or the Penguins.
Mm-hmm.
Obviously, I think the Rangers have the deepest blue line in the Eastern Conference anyways, for
and
sure.
And the best goaltender in the league.
Yeah. King Henrik, unreal. Their forward depth. They added Rick Nash to Richards, Gabrick. They have Kreider, who, if he puts up some points like he did in the playoffs,
Callahan has a
nice season. Like, they're just a deep team.
Derek Stepan, yeah.
They're going to play defense. They're going to get some timely scoring. They have goaltending. And then Pittsburgh, like, you can't. When you get Sidney Crosby,
it all depends
and Gino,
on Fleury, right? If Fleury plays like he did in that Eastern Conference quarterfinal series against Philly, like, that team is toast.
Well, and they got Vokunda to push him.
That's true too.
So, and I've read a couple places where they're saying that Fleury's not going to see more than 25 games.
Really?
I've read that a couple times. That's
just to keep him fresh,
yeah.
So it doesn't burn out. He's a guy who's played an incredibly big volume of games.
Yeah.
Over the past few seasons. So I wouldn't be surprised if he's maybe suffering a little bit from burnout.
Could be.
Do you like Philly?
I like Philly. I think the Van Riemsdyk deal kind of thins them out offensively. But if Braden Schenn and Sean Couturier are going to continue to progress from
Schenn,
what they did.
Schenn, I believe, is playing on a line with Giroux to start the season now.
Well, and Briere's injured to start the season. So they're going to be a good team.
I don't like the goaltending, obviously.
Obviously.
We say this every year about Philadelphia. But yeah.
I think Luke Schenn, I do like that trade for them because Luke Schenn can just go into Philly and be Luke Schenn.
Well, he needed to get out of Toronto.
He doesn't have to be the guy. He can be like the fifth guy there, the fourth guy.
Mm-hmm.
So he can just go there. He'll be playing with his brother. I like them. I really do like them. I think Pittsburgh and New York are ahead of them, though. That's where I take them right now.
Islanders,
I'm excited for John Tavares, man.
Oh, he's unbelievable.
Stud. See what kind of numbers he can put up.
You have the whole Lubo-Visnovsky thing going on, which is really, really weird. It's not like a Mante Teo thing, but nobody really knows what the hell's going on there either.
Yeah, that's strange.
He's supposed to be on a flight, not on a flight. Where's Lubo?
We can talk about him when he arrives, if he does.
Yeah. I wonder how much rope Garth Snow's going to get. Obviously, they sent down their two most prized valued junior commodity prospects in Griffin Reinhardt and Ryan Strome, which is weird because Niederreiter came up and he was a guy who was playing like third, fourth line, energy line minutes. Niederreiter would just go around hammering people, playing a physical brand of hockey, but his offensive numbers have kind of dwindled, but he's been very, very good in the NHL this year.
Yeah, I think one of the guys that the lockout helped out the most was Niederreiter. He won goal last year.
Yep.
Just awful season, and you think they'd learn from what happened with Bailey.
Even Okposo's development's been slow, and it's never really matched the expectations that were put upon him as well.
That's why I'm glad that they sent Strome down. This team's not ready to compete. Maybe they'll compete a little bit. They'll improve, but like, why waste a guy? Why damage a guy when you've already done it to so many guys? Hopefully this lockout saved Niederreiter's career, and hopefully he'll bounce back. Obviously, don't expect too much of them, although they have solid backup goaltender. Whenever your backup has on a 15-year contract, making $4.5 million,
you just get that.
You gotta be set.
You just get that certainty.
You're set.
He's going to get amnesty so badly. I guess that's it for that. Jersey.
We forgot,
we haven't even hit
cup
on
finalists.
Travis Zajac.
Zajac's a big deal, which I know you're a huge fan of.
Oh, man. Oh, good player. Very good player. I don't know if he's a first-line center.
I guess we'll find out.
Very good second-line center.
He's still going to be playing
center.
With
people love him.
Kovchuk.
They're projecting him to be the next captain. Unless, did he get the C? I don't even know. Who's wearing this C?
Salvador.
Okay.
Bryce Salvador.
Yeah. So, Bryce Salvador actually had a very good playoff last year as well.
Yeah, he did out of nowhere.
Yeah. But Zajac's a guy that they project big things out of down the road in terms of leadership, bringing those intangibles that I think Zach Parise had. It's just one of those teams I can't really get excited about. It's New Jersey. It's been like that for the last 15 years, but I'm sure they'll be in the mix.
Yeah, they'll be in the mix. It's wide open. And like we were talking about last night, look at the great start the Leafs got off to last year. It's shortened season. If someone just gets hot for 20 games, they're right in the mix. And look, we just went over each division, and every division is like, oh, man.
Yeah.
Question marks everywhere.
Northeast, Boston. Obviously, the Tim Thomas thing is messed up. It's another weird story. And the guy's in some bunker in Colorado enjoying his family.
Just put it behind you.
But he's coming back next year, so, yeah.
I think that team's going to run the division for sure.
Do you think there's a lot of pressure on Rask to perform in the absence of Thomas?
I think he's got like that Robin Leonard attitude where he wants to be the man anyways, and he's got he's confident, he's angry. Remember him in the AHL flipping out after a shootout loss and breaking his sticks, throwing Gatorade bottles and everything.
And he's fortunate. He's playing behind arguably one of the biggest, most physical defenses in the league. He has obviously Zdeno Chara in front of him. He's a perennial Norris Trophy candidate. Deep two-way forward group between Bergeron. I think Sagan's destined for huge things this season.
Yeah. He was playing unreal during the lockout.
You have Bergeron, you have Krejci, you have Lucic, lots of talent, lots of dynamic, like different styles of players up front, which I think
Brad
is
Marchand.
Huge. Brad Marchand, who, you know.
Nasty scoring touch.
Yeah, just super a piece of shit to play against.
Yeah. Not there. I think it's their division to lose for sure.
Buffalo is one of those teams I just hate.
And you're gonna hate them even more this year, bud, with Steve Ott, Patrick Kaleta,
they have John Scott as well.
Yeah, John He's Scott, just a plug. Who's gonna see 10 games this year, maybe.
He's just a plug.
Yeah, we don't need to waste too much breath on John Scott.
Obviously, their success is dependent upon the play of Ryan Miller. If Ryan Miller bounces back and has
a
productive season. Vanek, they have some pieces. Pominville, who I've always liked as a player. They have some nice pieces, but they're kind of like, they remind me a bit of Ottawa in the sense that they're just one of those teams that probably is like a 7th to like 10th place team. Yeah. And then,
I think that's
depending on a few injuries or goaltending factors.
See what Tyler Myers plays.
Yeah. Montreal. Who we kind of hit on a little bit with talking Galchenyuk, but yeah.
They looked awful last night. I'm trying to decide if Toronto looks really good or if it was just Montreal looked very, very bad.
That was a team that looked like they couldn't move the puck.
They got Carey Price, I'm a huge fan of. I think he's a great goaltender. There's not much else to like, though, on that team. Their top six forwards are dynamic, but they're all smallish. There's no stud that's going to go out there and get a point a game. They have a good mix with Pacioretty. I take that back. Pacioretty, I think, is going to be a good player.
I like Pulkanish a lot.
Pulkanish
well.
Is a good player, but he's not like that elite.
No, he's like that very good
second line center. Which
he can play a two-way game.
We'll see how Galchenyuk, how he plays.
And they need that talent so badly.
They gotta.
When's the last time Montreal actually had like a young, exciting forward that could score? Remember when like all the hoopla was surrounding Guillaume Latendresse?
Guillaume.
And that was years ago. And Louis LeBlanc might have been that guy as well. No. It's one of those organizations that's really been barren for prospects for the past.
Why are these guys nickel and diming PK Subban? Let's go. You got to get that.
I don't know how much he wants, but like, I figure he's, what, a $4 to $4.5 million player at this stage?
Yeah, he's probably asking for $6 million.
You think so? Maybe $5 million?
Well, I'm assuming he's asking for $6 million because they're not even talking right now.
Mm-hmm.
Like, let's get a deal done here. Unless
he's young, he has his brain farts, he blows coverage every once in a while.
Absolutely, and I'm not saying they should pay him the $6 million, but they should figure this out.
Mm-hmm.
He shouldn't be playing right now. And you don't know what you're going to get from Andrei Markov. You took that hit from behind, or he turned into that hit from Kadri last night. I think everyone is probably holding their breath in Montreal when they saw him go down, because that guy's been a band-aid the last 20 games played in the last 2 years.
You figure they'd be conditioned to it, though. Oh, no, Markov's gone down again. What do we do? Well, let's pull out your emergency management plan. It's like, Markov's hurt again. What do we do? And you already have your plan.
I like Desharnais.
Little scrappy AHL guy. He's proven he can play at the NHL level.
Yeah, I think he's going to put up some points, but I think they're going to struggle. They're going to be at the bottom of the East, I think. Which, we want to move on to Toronto, the team they faced last night. Expect anything from them?
No, probably not. I probably put him in that like 8 to 12 sliding scale in the East.
I think they'll be exciting.
It's their goaltending is going to kill them.
Yeah,
eventually, unless they actually do something about it, which they could. Wouldn't be too hard to do that. Obviously, they're pairing salary like we talked about. I expect them to be very aggressive probably this offseason. I wouldn't be surprised to see them maybe not tank, but, you know, take on like talent just to play for the short term. I think this is an organization that has probably some vision of what they want to do in terms of getting guys like Corey Perry into their organization in the offseason. Obviously, there's the Randy Carlyle connection that we talked about earlier as well. Kind of how we talk about Brian Murray being the guy that drafted those two guys as well. I don't expect much from them, but they're just one of those teams that should play hard. They've had success at the AHL level with a number of their players as well. So, yeah, it's Toronto.
Yeah.
I don't know. Considering the history between the two franchises, they don't really bother me that much, especially the new wave, but that's just me. That's what happens when you don't make the playoffs for 8 years. You just kind of lose interest in what the
Sure. I think they will be competitive. I think they'll be in a lot of games. I think they'll probably get blown out a lot. But they look exciting if Nazem Kadri can play like he kind of did last night. You got Jameson Rymsdyk. It is thin. And then you got Lupul and Kessel, obviously, and then you got Tyler Bozak. It's a forward group that you don't know what to expect.
And if they fall out of it, they can trade a guy like Lupul, who I think is going to free agency as well.
The word is that they're trying to re-sign him right now.
Oh, yeah?
I think that's probably a good move. He had a dynamite season last year after kind of floating around in Edmonton and Philly.
Having some health complications as well.
It's a team that has some parts. I don't expect much from them, but I feel like they're going to be tight, and I feel like there's going to be some stressful games against Ottawa.
And which leads you to the Senators. The other night I had them placed, I think, 7th to 10th in that kind of bracket. I love their scoring. I love their, you know, I love the fact that they can roll four lines that are dynamic. They bring something different. Each line can do something different. They have a lot of interchangeable pieces. Erik Karlsson's obviously a dynamic young talent, and I think he's out to prove people that last year wasn't a fluke. And goaltending is obviously a strength for this team as well. But everything comes down to injuries and the defense. And I could see one of those two things going wrong. Ottawa was very fortunate last year. I think they lost only like 192 man games to injury. This year they already have Jared Cowan, who's out for 48. Michael Lundin's already out for 2 or 3 weeks. I don't know. Hey, it depends on the blue line and what
always,
Brian Murray does.
Always comes back to the blue line. You're right. You're bang on with the forwards. And I like how Paul McLean reads his guys when they're going. He knows what line's going. He'll throw the third and fourth line out there a couple shifts in a row if the number one and two guys aren't getting it done. And there's some scoring punch on each line. Like everyone has the capability of putting the odd goal in that I saw yesterday with Chris Neal, Zach Smith. even Jimmy O'Brien, first line draft pick, changed his game up a little bit.
And Kyle Turris is a guy that people are expecting bigger things from. Now that he's accustomed to Ottawa, he's settled. He's bigger.
Bigger.
Physically,
obviously,
more mature.
Spent the summer with the strength and conditioning coach and his buddy, Patrick Wierkos, played in Finland. And the word out of training camp is that he looked awesome. So hopefully Kyle Turris and Alfredsson, and if it's going to be Laton Dress on that line, they'll get it going. And obviously, if the first line stays healthy, they're going to put up their points. There's no way they're not going to.
Mm-hmm.
So it comes back to defense, and maybe the blue line's not as bad as we think it is. Maybe it is. Well, I guess it all depends on whoever they have with when Lundin comes back, and then the combination between Wierkos, Benoit, and Borowiecki. If those new guys can come in and they can play some minutes and not cost the team, then you don't have to worry about overplaying Gonchar and Phillips.
Having to go out in the market and overpay for someone to come in and do it for you.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
I think Craig Anderson will be solid to get some minutes from
Who do you have coming out of the East and who do you have coming out of the West?
It's tough. Out of the West.
St. Louis?
I'm going to go with St. Louis. And out of the East, I'm going to have to go Rangers. I don't want to see that. I don't want to see them block shots and play on their own end throughout four rounds next year. But I think it's the Rangers. I just think they're too deep. They have the best goaltender. It'd be nice to see them in Pittsburgh in conference finals.
Mm-hmm.
See how that plays out.
I picked the Rangers the other night as well. Obviously, Boston, I guess, is the second most popular choice. St. Louis, I like as well. Chicago, I like. I could see Vancouver doing something just because I think they have a lot of depth on the blue line.
If they can,
I think their goaltending situation will stabilize. I think it's just like a one game hiccup. Well, let that team get accustomed and then go from there. But Vancouver's been too good for too long, just to like. But I guess obviously a lot of that depends on Kessler. But
didn't watch any of the game last night. Bob McKenzie had a series of tweets sent out saying, "Watch the highlights because it wasn't on Schneider or Luongo. Their defense was apparently awful."
Mm-hmm.
Just terrible puck possession, turning it over,
blown coverage.
Yeah. So, yeah. I obviously, you don't read into first games. Who knows? Look at Ottawa last year. Their first two games, their first three or four games, they let in seven goals twice. Things will change, but I don't know. I really like St. Louis.
Mm-hmm.
If Vancouver can get a part for Luongo, if they can trade him and get a nice piece, and Kessler can come back healthy, obviously they're going to be someone to mess with in the West. And then I'm not counting out Chicago. I think Patrick Kane's going to have a monster year. If Marian Hossa can stay healthy, he's going to have a big year. Him and Jonathan Toews, and obviously they have that stud Duncan Teeth on the back end.
Patrick Sharp as well. Loaded, loaded. Anyways.
An interesting season. It'll be fun.
All right. Well, it's been a blast. Always enjoy coming in here with you. I guess I'll see you tomorrow night at the game.
Tomorrow night.
Awesome. Awesome. Listeners, thanks for listening to us, and hopefully we can get in here soon, record another one. You already just checked out?
No, I'm jacked, man. I can't wait to walk in the bank tomorrow night.
Should be fun. Should be a good one. Free beer for everybody.
I'm just excited to see Philip Kuba.
Me too. All right, in all seriousness, let's just get out of here. But thanks, listeners, again, and stay tuned. We'll be back for more.